Ground Cover News is a nonprofit street paper that was founded in 2010 as a means to empower low-income persons to make the transitions from homeless to housed and jobless to employed. Vendors purchase each copy of the Ground Cover News regular edition at our office for 50 cents. This money goes towards production costs. Vendors then work selling the paper on the street for $2, keeping all income and tips from each sale. This audio production was made possible by the Ann Arbor District Library and recorded at Fifth Avenue Studios. If you consistently enjoy Ground Cover Speaks, continuing to buy physical newspapers from the Ground Cover vendors ensures that we can sustain production. The physical paper and in-person interaction is at the heart of our work. You can find the link to our next audio recording in the upcoming print issue of Ground Cover News, which will hit the street on July 14th. Thanks for listening. Special thanks to our print advertisers, the People's Food Co-op, St. Francis of Assisi Parish, First Baptist Church, Bethlehem United Church of Christ, Community Mental Health, the Office of Community and Economic Development, Cineholic, McKinley Tenants Association, and Ann Arbor for Public Power. Letter to the Editor. Last week, I was walking in downtown Ann Arbor when a Ground Cover News vendor, I'm not going to use his name out of respect for his privacy, asked me if I was interested in buying the latest issue. As is often the case, I was running late, but I love Ground Cover News content and always enjoy meeting the vendors. So, we chatted for a minute while I paid for my copy of the special edition, and then I kept moving towards my destination. As I was walking away, I heard the vendor asking another person nearby if they were interested in buying a copy. When I didn't hear anyone respond, I decided to observe from across the street to see how it would play out. In the few minutes I stood observing across the street, I saw multiple people, some with young kids, walk past this vendor, either ignoring him entirely, acting as though they didn't hear him speaking to them, or demonstrated an unwillingness to talk with him through their dismissive body language. I know there are many people who do acknowledge or stop to speak with vendors or others when approached on the street, but I've seen the opposite happen enough times that it feels necessary to say something. If you feel such a sense of urgency to get to your destination that you choose not to acknowledge that someone is speaking to you, please take time to reflect on why you prioritize your own sense of urgency over respecting other human beings' humanity. If you're not familiar with the work of Tema Okun, please take time to learn about white supremacy culture and how this behavior perpetuates it. If you find it scary or uncomfortable to be approached by a stranger in public, please take time to unlearn stranger danger myths and how to identify and learn to respond to legitimate safety concerns rather than fearing all strangers and teaching your children to do the same. Whether folks we encounter on the street are selling things like Ground Cover News to make money, asking for money without having anything to sell, or just trying to be acknowledged and seen as fellow human beings, the very least we can do is acknowledge them with kindness and care. Our children are watching how we move through the world. We have a responsibility to move with kindness and care for everyone in our community, especially for the folks who are the most marginalized. If you read this far and find yourself feeling defensive or like your individual experience isn't reflected, please try to recognize that a 700-word piece can't possibly capture all of the contextual factors that may impact each person's capacity for engagement with strangers. That said, we have to be mindful of the power dynamics inherent in our interactions with the people around us. Our individual traumas, mental illnesses, and upbringings don't exist in a vacuum. To borrow from my own experience, I'm a therapist who specializes in treating trauma, in part because I have a history of complex PTSD. Because of my professional and personal privilege, I have access to quality therapy and psychotropic medications that I need to help me function. Even so, I have struggled at times to be emotionally regulated enough to demonstrate kindness to folks who approach me on the street. If you're healing from trauma, caring for your mental health, dealing with the effects of prior street harassment, etc., it prevents you from engaging with the folks who approach you on the street. I truly get it and empathize with how difficult it can be. And I hope you receive the kindness and care we all deserve, and you're able to pay it forward when strangers approach you for help or support. From Erica Johnson. There's nothing to try no more. Heather Feather, Ground Cover Vendor number 45. When I was a child, I heard, "You get a headache, you get hooked. You might never stop or you might never come down." That was my war on drugs. Today's war on drugs is that there is nothing left to try. If you do drugs today, you might never see tomorrow. Fentanyl has taken over. When various kinds of street pills were tested, 42% contained at least 2 milligrams of fentanyl. If you are wondering how fentanyl got here, it was first used in the 1960s as an intravenous anesthetic, and then in a pain patch. Fentanyl is now popping up in marijuana. People trying marijuana for the first time might die from fentanyl. There really is nothing left to try. There's been a decrease in overdoses because of naloxone. If you are using drugs, carry a bottle of naloxone. It might save your life. Better yet, just don't pick up the first drug. The fact is, it is here, and I am really concerned. I hope you're there when I get back to Ann Arbor. Love, your Heather Feather.
Back in my Detroit days, I was invited by Linda King, commander of a National Guard unit, to their Kwanzaa celebration in Highland Park. Linda and I met through Marge Bursey, the first African-American to get a degree in social work from the University of Michigan. Marge founded the Youth Advocacy Anti-Hunger Program on the East Side and had a large community of volunteers, supporters, and graduates. Linda and I took her advice to meet and connect. The Kwanzaa theme of the day was community economics. Linda organized a circle of everyone in uniform, about 20 people, with me at the end. Each of us introduced ourselves and said whatever came to mind. The first person said, "I am proud to be an American," and I felt some inner resistance to those words. I had studied much and worked 2.5 years in West Germany with German Christians who were active in the anti-fascist resistance in the Third Reich and in the Cold War. Gosner Mission was an industrial mission with roots in the working class and included a boys' home. Living abroad is an eye-opener, and I learned even more about current affairs, especially civil rights and the war in Vietnam. I extended my service 6 months to be in a seminar of study, do factory work, and take a trip to Poland. We learned that West Germany, with U.S. advice, had not settled World War II with Poland, so there was no treaty for boundary recognition, and that NATO was formed to target the USSR for destruction. Put that with the genocide of slavery and the Indian Wars, and how could I be proud to be an American? Back in Highland Park, the next National Guard person began with, "I'm proud to be an American." By the time I heard that phrase the fourth time, I took a breath and entered a meditative state that took me to Cuba. In front of the University of Havana is a traffic circle with a small park and a monument to Julio Antonio Mella, a martyr for Cuban independence in the 1930s. There's a plaque with these words which entered my mind stream: "Luchar por la revolución social en la América. No es una utopía por los locos y fanáticos, es luchar por el próximo paso en la avance de la historia." The English translation of this for ground cover readers is, "Struggle for the social revolution in America. It is not a utopia for lunatics and fanatics. It's a struggle for the next step in the advance of history." I had heard "I'm proud to be an American" some 20 times, and now came my turn. I let my heart speak. "I'm proud to be an American, and the America of which I speak is not only from the Atlantic to the Pacific, but also from the Arctic to the Antarctic. That is North America, South America, Central America, and the Caribbean, which is the center of the first maps of the New World." I learned this in Cuba, where I also learned about community economics, the Kwanzaa theme of the day. My heart spoke. There are two kinds of markets. One is the natural market, which exchanges goods and services for mutual benefit. The other is the commodity market, which is ruled by profits. I'm learning to combine the American Revolution of 1776 with the Bolivarian and Cuban revolutions. Now I can say, "I am proud to be an American revolutionary. doing something to advance freedom, peace, human dignity, and solidarity. I study, communicate, and go to work. Detached from the trance of unworthiness, as Roshi Joan Halifax and Tara Brach discuss so beautifully, to tell the truth about your life is the beginning of the revolution. It continues as you share experience, analysis, and make collective decisions on the next step.
Being a Nice Human, a Recipe in Development by Muhammad Al-Mustafa. Greetings, dear reader. I start this article with a simple prayer. May love, serenity, peace, laughter, joy, happiness, and financial stability be your constant companions in abundance, now and forever. Amen. A polite gentleman on the number 4 Ann Arbor Transportation Authority bus, wearing a shirt with the following sentence on it, "Be a nice human," inspired me to write this article. I thank him, wherever he may be in life. While I am still working on figuring out what exactly makes us humans and what we are as humans, other than the fact that we are a collection of carbon-based cellular systems functioning on electricity, I have come to prize and appreciate the collective thought of the power of human goodness. Sometimes when I feel down and gloomy, I open up YouTube and start watching videos with titles like Faith in Humanity and Power of Goodness. They always make me smile, so I thought I would delve deeper into what it is that makes a good human. Below are some of the common ingredients that are freely and readily available in the cupboards of our souls and shelves of our hearts. If mixed together in the right amounts at the right times, they can produce a very wholesome and deliciously good human. Feel free to mix these ingredients in the right amounts that may please and appease your palate. The ingredients: kindness. Be considerate, generous, and understanding of others. Advancing benevolence to our fellow beings, comforting them in times of need, sharing a meal, sharing a nice meme or a funny picture, sharing a song, opening or holding a door, consoling and comforting. It just feels good. Kindness is readily available within you and is not expensive at all. It is an ingredient that never runs out. On the contrary, the more you distribute it, the more it self-replenishes. Be kind. Empathy. A good friend of mine trademarked the following sentence: sympathy devours, empathy empowers. This is true. Being empathetic means putting your soul and being in your fellow human's shoes or state of being and feeling what he or she is going through. In doing so, you realize what he is suffering from or persevering against, and you are better able to help him. Empathy almost always leads to understanding and to solutions that can resolve problems on an individual, societal, or a global scale. From fighting depression to hunger and disease, don't be afraid to sprinkle on a generous amount of empathy. It also doesn't run out and is readily available and self-replenishing. Makes you a better human as it gives you the opportunity to feel others' pain, and it might help you avoid the same predicaments. Respect. Respect to me means being considerate of others' feelings and limiting negative actions. It's understanding that we are all different and experience the world differently. This diversity of perspectives allows us to build our own thoughts, facts, opinions, and more. Because we are a varied species, we naturally have differing opinions and points of view, and they are all valid to an extent. Each and every one of us should be proud of who we are and respect others for who they are. Life is tough, and the varying degrees of opinions are what make life a sweet smorgasbord. Being respectful of others' opinions, ideas, cultures, heritage, race, political affiliations, cuisines, or whatever it may be, opens up the problem-solving mechanisms in our brains by exposing us to different methods or modes of critical thinking and problem resolution. If we had not been respectful and appreciative of others' cultures or individuality, we would not have been exposed to the transmission of diverse knowledge and wisdom. Gratitude. This one I'm still working on learning myself. Just being thankful for what we have, whether it's a little or a lot, whether it's new or old, whether it's opaque or bold. Being thankful can be difficult at times, but if we make it a habit, it takes us a long way. Being appreciative of who we are and what we do have gives us pride in our efforts to obtain the feelings and possessions that we have. It reminds us that we are capable of obtaining greater things. Gratefulness is a positive loop mechanism. The more grateful we are, the more we realize what we have and what we did to obtain it, and the more we strengthen those positive attainment muscles. So be grateful no matter where you are in this life and at whatever stage you are. Gratitude is a cool attitude, my dude. Honesty. I used to be a liar. It just came naturally to me. Lies flowed off of my tongue uncontrollably, whether it was to spare someone's feelings or for personal gain. But you know something? I got tired of it, bro. I kept forgetting my lies. It happened so many damn times. I would tell a lie, weave a wide web, embellish it. My imagination would run wilder than a Mustang on the prairies. I could tell a lie better than Picasso, Van Gogh, and Michelangelo could paint. But you know what happened. I got tired of being embarrassed. Embarrassed about forgetting my lies. Have you ever had someone you told a lie to come back and ask you about it? And you stand there dumbfounded like, dude, what are you talking about? They're like, dude, that's what you said last week. And then you can't remember anything because it was all lies flowing like a spring stream. I couldn't do it anymore. My brain is not that complex. Honesty is best. When you tell the truth, you don't lose, and you never forget the truth. Being honest is respectful. It's respectful because you are not belittling those around you by underestimating their mental capacities through assuming that your lies will entrap or fool them. Being honest is awesome. Just administer honesty in a polite way in situations that involve others' feelings. You know what I'm saying, partner. Humility. Being humble does not mean belittling or downgrading yourself. On the contrary, it means that you are confident enough in yourself, solid enough to know your faults and limitations and work on them, while also recognizing your strengths and virtues. Being humble allows you to listen, to learn, and to grow. It allows you to connect and enjoy. As an immigrant American myself, humility has allowed me to experience and enjoy cultures, cuisines, and music from all over the world, which has made me into the unique individual that I am. An old Islamic saying goes as follows: the more you humble yourself, the more God will uplift you. Arrogance is abhorrent. Pride in oneself is okay, but arrogance will turn people away from you, and that is not good. Be humble and practice humility, and you shall unlock so many great experiences that will surely blow your mind. You never know where your next piece of happiness and joy is coming from. It might be the old lady at the library or the homeless man on the corner. Forgiveness. Now, this ingredient never goes bad, never expires, and you can never ever overuse it. On the contrary, the more of it you add, the sweeter it spices things up. Forgiveness is beautiful. Don't hold negative emotions in your heart. Forgiveness rejuvenates the heart, invigorates the soul, and makes it lighter. And I think one of the sweetest things in the world is when you see the smile on the individual's face who might have wronged you but regretted it and came to ask for your forgiveness. I even go further and say forgive those who wrong you and don't apologize or regret it. Just leave it to the cosmic, galactic, karmic universe and it will surely return to you in many positive ways. I do say forgiveness is one of the sweetest joys in the world. Practice it wisely. Compassion. This is a key ingredient. It's synonymous with empathy to an extent, but more proactive in the sense that you not only feel others' pain or discomfort, but also exert some energy into alleviating it. Compassion makes us more proactive in alleviating issues and solving others' problems. Compassion is one of those ingredients that's really good for the heart and soul. It makes both of them stronger, just like how the sun and vitamin D strengthen bones. Positivity. Be careful, because this ingredient is fast-acting, fast-spreading, and almost contagious, and makes the whole recipe extremely tasty and delicious as well. It will leave you in delight. It is hard to bottle and contain, has no expiration date, and you can sense it before you can see it or smell it. It is one that is hard to obtain at times, but once mastered, it can never be exhausted. You start off by adding small amounts of it to your recipe, and it exponentially grows by itself. I say start by obtaining small bits of it here and there, like enjoying the bright, shiny sun rays in the morning when you wake up, the wafting smell of flowers on your morning walk, a sweet sip of your latte or cappuccino or green tea in the morning, smiles of pretty girls walking by, the sweet songs of the birds by the window, a beautiful song. Whatever, just make sure you stop and look for it. It is hidden in obvious plain sight all around you. Once you get into the habit of collecting and displaying it, it becomes a key ingredient that you can share with all the neighbors, and you will never run out of it. There are a lot more ingredients out there in the world that can make for a wonderful recipe for being a nice human. I myself have not yet obtained or mastered all of them, but I am working on it. And I hope that you do too, friend. As always, may we all enjoy joy when it comes, and may we be consoled and alleviated when we need it. Amen. Thank you.
Marcona's Angels. Because I am on the spectrum, relationships can be difficult minefields to navigate. You might think I would have some difficulties working mainly with younger women, but not so. The sensitivity from my Asperger's opens opportunities for me to form bonds with women. I have a friendly but productive working relationship with these women without any intergender complications. I'm pansexual and have spent the last 20 years celibate, not fully intentional. My journey was that of many temptations that were all considered, but for various reasons rejected. I apparently preferred not to relinquish my love to others. As I examine myself through deep introspection, I've concluded that I know I give myself fully, more than most people could conceive, and that I'm crushed when the same devotion and dedication does not meet mine. The women at Ground Cover and Argus indirectly and unknowingly supported me and gave me the confidence to trust. These wonderful, educated women have shown their love, strength, and compassion in unselfish support of this poorly educated, broken old man to help me reach for my destiny, my final words. Hopefully, a previously hidden message from the wisdom of extraordinary experiences of assorted lifetimes may result in a new birth of a possibly new humanity. Empathy, compassion, and sensitivity are all abilities that I am gifted with and weigh heavily in the way I relate to others and the level of intensity of my emotional processing. I am able to bond extremely well with most women. Gifted and cursed with an intense level of empathy, I have been better able to relate to a more emotional way of processing. So I'm not sure why I was surprised when all of these wonderful, talented, strong, intelligent, and beautiful, if I didn't say all those, they might hurt me, kidding, women not just supported me, but raised me up. They were at first my editors and advisors, then friends. All of them are talented writers, editors, and or teachers. They were editing my articles and really encouraging me. Now my angels are my good friends. I'd do anything for them, even help them move or take them to the airport. Since I moved back home to Ann Arbor, Lindsay was and is my first friend, and she and Ken are my closest friends. Lindsay has been the anchor since the beginning. One look at that beautiful smile, so warm and bright, envelops me and inspires me to be a better person. I have been overwhelmed by all of my saving angels. After Lindsay and Ken led my way, these other wonderful angels joined to help carry me. The rest of Marcona's angels, Louisa, graduate student instructor, volunteer, with ground cover and was editing my articles, then began sharing her off time with me to help shape my talents and skills. Louisa gives me time she really doesn't have and has become a trusted friend. Alex, known as Sasha at Argus, is a young Finnish freelance writer and ground cover volunteer who took a personal interest in me as a friend and started editing and sharing about my writing. Then when I lost my car and had to move into a tent near the railroad tracks, Alex and Greg, her partner, bought me supports for my broken knees, food, and supplies. Note, they don't have money. I don't forget that kind of shared love. I will be forever grateful. Friends for life. Lit writer, and I started sharing writing projects, which then progressed into a supportive relationship. Layla, editor, graduate student, friend, is the deputy editor at Ground Cover and does final edits on my Ground Cover articles. Layla has been supportive of my work and me personally, another good friend now. I thank each and every one of you from the bottom of my heart to the tips of Kona's wings for giving me the release to fly the way Kona taught me. I know Kona would be and is very appreciative for the love shared to help me reach my destiny, as she has given her life for me to achieve my destiny. All of our grace to raising my supporting angels with all admiration and love, my Kona love, with Kona. Author's note, Glenn Gates sketched this cartoon in his free time, which he has very little of, but still helps everyone. He is a mentor and a ground cover anchor for all of us. He is so special, I dare you to try and find somebody to say different. He gets all the love I can give. Bless ground cover. Almost all of my articles have some reflection of Ken Parks, for he is my mentor.
Mad God is Not for the Faint of Heart, by James Manning, ground cover vendor number 16. Like many people, I find myself thoroughly impressed whenever I reflect on the seemingly infinite capabilities humankind demonstrates through an endless list of accomplishments throughout the ages. From the inventions of necessity, observations of reality, mathematical truths, and of course, the ability of conveying the imagination through artistic expression. Despite the fact that we've been at such practices for quite some time, it remains easy to be awed at what we have created in our world. Not very long ago, I was amazed to learn that the human imagination is so powerful, so complex, that figments of my dreams could actually be entities with their own independent sentience. This left me thinking I'm either crazy or that humankind hasn't even begun to scratch the surface of understanding our untapped potential. Going back to our talent of bringing the imagination to life through the medium of artistic expression, there are some who have birthed worlds beyond our wildest dreams and our nightmares. This article reviews a film I stumbled across when I anticipated something different, a film which is certainly nowhere near the usual shallow, simplistic, and generic cash grab Hollywood genre. At first glance, one would think it occupied the realm of horror, but it held a deeper philosophical outlook that changed my ability to list it as any known genre of storytelling. In fact, saying it follows a cohesive and solid storyline is unnecessarily generous. Oh, there's a structure, but it's more like a marker for direction so you don't get hopelessly lost. Nonetheless, this film blew me away. I especially enjoyed the fearlessness with which the movie was made, the total disregard for the judgments and comfort of the viewers. At least for myself, it is a very important part of creative expression. Set your mind and imagination free of the restraining chains of appropriateness and every other reasoning or excuse to limit the mind's potential. So this film I've done my best to justify the existence, and even the necessity of, is simply titled Mad God. One blaring ironic thing about this movie, I said, was not intended as another Hollywood blockbuster, is in fact that it is directed by Phil Tippett. It's ironic that though he's not exactly a household name, he was a special effects expert on some of Hollywood's great films such as Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and Jurassic Park, to name a few. So already the creation of this film has an interesting backstory. I won't cover the entire story of how it came to be, but I can tell you this was an on and off project that was 30 years in the making. This was indeed partly because the film was made using stop motion animation, which Tippett was working on for the Jurassic Park computer animation, and which was becoming good enough to begin replacing traditional special effects. This made Tippett, who had begun this independent side project, recognize that inevitably, reliance on computer-generated movies would make a stop-motion film obsolete. So he shelved the project and it sat in storage for years until discovered by one of his colleagues. I'm not sure if stop-motion film never fully died due in part to the popularity of Tim Burton's Nightmare Before Christmas and other such films having enough of a fan base to keep the style in practice, but I'd love to ask Tippett about it. When Mad God was discovered, there was no doubt encouragement towards Tippett's journey of pursuing the once-abandoned film to its completion. Although I'm suggesting this movie, I would feel pretty cruel if I were to admit a stern warning to you. This is not, I repeat, is not a movie for the faint of heart. It depicts the darkest, grittiest, most horrible, awful, unrepentant soiler of all known things of sacred purity. It is full-on, right to the edge of the worst possible horrors of not just humanity, but any and all perceived existence. You cannot just call it dark and disturbed because it is so much more than that, and so much more than any sad, sadistic offense. It's a film that normal, good-natured people should never witness. It leaves you feeling and knowing you are forever changed for the worse. However, anyone who can see beyond this will observe other underlying points and lessons, unavoidable truths, such as the forever unchanging cruelty that the cycle of time employs for the continued miracle of existence. Yes, this is a movie that is definitely not for everybody. However, I more or less got the gist and absolutely loved it, if only for its level of creative expression. And I've always been into all kinds of deep philosophical crap, so with that, I highly recommend it to any like-minded persons, and especially gore and horror fans. Saying that writing a descriptive review of this film is a challenge is an understatement. I wouldn't know how to begin describing it, but a 90s Tool music video comes to mind. So there you go. I tried my best informing you, and I hope you find this assessment accurate, if not totally enlightening, for those of you who choose to check out this film anyway. Being a fan of the darker corners of our imaginations, I thoroughly enjoyed this particular creation. I still wouldn't call this a horror movie, but I do recall it being attached to the Shudder, which is a horror-themed streaming service. You can find it there, or at the library on DVD. Just don't hate me if you get nightmares. I did my best to warn you all, but I hope you can understand the point I'm trying to make. This film is unique and interesting. Thank you.
Street Scenes, written by Mike Jones. I found a new purpose and passion, photojournalism and street photography. This passion and purpose could not have come at a better period in my life because I'm the type of person that gets bored easily and lose interest for whatever reasons. For those who don't know, I'm attending Washtenaw Community College to pursue a liberal arts associate's degree. This semester, I'm taking English and photography class at WCC. My photography class at WCC allows students to check out cameras and other equipment in order to pass the course if you don't have your own camera and equipment. When I first held a Canon T7 Rebel camera in my hands and saw the images this thing could produce, I knew I had to have one, so I purchased my own. I realized photography and imaging is important as a learning tool. I was a lazy reader in my youth. I did a lot of learning through pictures and books and reading as little as possible to comprehend. Photography is popular. My class is full of different people with different photography goals in mind. Again, I'm taking photography to become a photojournalist and street photographer. I met other classmates that are into microphotography and portrait and landscape photography. Here are a few photos I took while selling ground cover newspapers in our beautiful city, Ann Arbor, in Washtenaw County. I hope y'all enjoy. Peace.
My name is Delon Eaton. I am a writer and contributor for Ground Cover. And the name of the article is Dr. Sebi's Diet Really Works. I grew up riding the fast food Ferris wheel as a child. Growing up with a single mother in Detroit, TV pretty much raised me. Commercials, promos, and giveaways were usually linked to my favorite TV shows. I remember one commercial in particular. The advertising was for a burger that was so good you could eat the paper when you were done. Needless to say, the paper was not edible. I tried. My grandmother was a cook, a lunch lady in fact, but by the time I came around, she was wiser, tired, and retired. My great-grandmother, God rest her soul, didn't know how to read, so starting a family restaurant was out of the question. Having to take the city bus when I was 8 years old, I was reliant on fast food for survival. From French fries from clowns to onion rings wearing crowns and every red-headed colonel selling chicken, I thought Popeye ate spinach. I was caught in a web. Low-income family, barely making ends meet. Depression soon set in, and coming from where I'm from, comfort food was, of course, the go-to as the remedy for emotional pain. Nutrition was out of the question. There was simply no time. I mean, how? With my mother working, no father, a retired grandmother, and me going to school and learning life, plus yo, like I was 8. So over the years, I developed type 2 diabetes. At 17, I said enough was enough and I was going to take control of my eating habits. I decided to start eating salads and salmon and also jogging. While this routine definitely was a great start to my new lifestyle and covered the basics, it did not give me a full understanding of the effects certain foods caused on my body. I used to have to take metformin and insulin. Even though I had worked myself off of them, the damage to my pancreas had already been done. So I was determined to get in the best shape of my life, and I started to research different types of fruits and vegetables. That's what led me to Dr. Sebi's diet. The point of the diet is to eat foods that reduce acid in the body and eliminate mucus buildup. Acid and mucus carry diseases, and diseases are bad, okay? Alkaline is a type of battery that charges all of our electronic devices that we use today. The body is no different than these devices. They need charge. If, God forbid, someone's heart stops, they would hook that person up to a defibrillator and they would yell clear and send electrically charged currents to jumpstart the heart. Alkaline is a type of battery that charges all of the electronic devices that we use today. The body is no different than these devices. They need charge. If, God forbid, someone's heart stops, they would hook that person up to a defibrillator and they would yell clear and send electrically charged currents to jumpstart the heart. Alkaline is a type of battery where the electrolyte has a pH value of above 7. Alkaline foods have this same pH threshold. Certain types of fruits and vegetables are genetically modified and do not have a high enough pH value to recharge your organs or reverse cell death. Dr. Sebi's diet is a plant-based diet that prioritizes foods that have pH value above 7.
All my early life, I was taught that the glory of male is how beautiful his mate is. For me, never having a true legal wife had seemed to make me walk with a bent neck, slumped over to a degree in defeat of this game they call love. When I was a kid, my older brothers would pay me no mind unless I had pretty girlfriends hanging out with me. Soon, I learned my value was the beauty beheld in my female company. Having schizophrenia, I barely knew how to really connect with males, let alone females. It seems to me, as I read the Bible, that the glory of a woman is her hair, and I concluded from my upbringing, the glory of a man is his wife, and the glory of God is his son. Jesus may have never been married, no children, never having sexual intercourse, but I surmise his glory is the bride of Christ, like the glory of Christians is Jesus' glory. It is written that greater are the works the bride will do because Jesus cut his life so short and willing laying down his life for the bride, a.k.a. Christians. So we as Christians should work to exceed the good works of Jesus who died at 33 and a half years old. I am a Christian schizophrenic on Social Security and I may not be the mainstream voice of ground cover. With that said, blessed is the organization that would have many lenses to see from, therefore to pick the best lens of that given day. Jesus rightfully said the only way to the Father is by me, and our surpassing good works would not ever be obtainable without the sacrifice of the sinless holy, and that means without blemish, of the holy sheep, Christ Jesus. My heart's desire is that one day I fall in love and walk in a world with amazing love in me. For it is written that love always wins. To walk upright, not slumped over, as the world had not beaten me in the game called love. All things are possible to those that believe, and I do believe that at 46 and 47 years old, I stopped counting birthdays when I realized no one was showing up for my birthdays. That life can start even at the age of 47. And I believe that my glory can walk into a room one day and my life will therefore begin. I do notice that people hold you in higher esteem when you have a beautiful wife or mate. And although my upbringing, I was taught my value was that who I'm with, I don't think the Bible sees it that way. Because when it comes down to it, Abba, Father God wants man to be the glory of his son, Jesus.
Love by love. Love is stronger than death. It was Christmas week, 1983, on the island of Cyprus, situated between Greece to the north and Turkey to the east, in the Mediterranean Sea. The island is mostly known for the strong Greek presence, but half of the island is under Turkish control. The weather is beautiful, comparable to San Diego, maybe a little cooler. The mountains on the west side of the island get cold and there is snow skiing. The rest of the island is about beaches and quaint but very functional villages. Sordid discos, party spots, family restaurants are all supported by big tourism in the summer from northern Europeans. The island could be considered as a theoretical bridge to the Middle East, Asia. The Cypriots are a very warm, friendly, and honest people. The stage has been set for this romantic tale of a truly pure love, here at this old castle-like hotel on the mountain of Western. The stage has been set for this romantic tale of a truly pure love here at this old castle-like hotel on a mountain of Western Cyprus. And now for the characters destined to be entwined in a cosmic struggle over love lost. A young American scratch, about 18 years old, named Martin, 6'1", with brown hair, hazel eyes, and a deep beach-living tan. He was considered a handsome young man by most, with a light in his eyes that shines right into your soul, complementing an infectious smile with a colorful, relentless energy and a consistent, inquisitive nature. Martin was staying the week of Christmas at this beautiful, hidden, old castle-like hotel in the mountains of Cyprus with most of his assembled family. A captivating young Cypriot light. At 18 years old, Florentia, like Martin, had a personality that consumed the attention of a room. She had long, dark, flowing hair and relentlessly deep, dark eyes that could not be escaped. Her smile was so warm as to settle an entire village all on its own. Respectfully, she was a beautiful young woman in all regards. Florentia also was there with her family for Christmas week. Martin and his family were sharing a large dinner provided by the hotel in the large dining room when Florentia approached Martin at his dinner table. With a deep-eyed, warm smile, she asked him to dance. Wow, is all Martin could think, tongue-tied and speechless. This was a first for Martin. Speechless is not a word you would ever consider in a description of Martin. Now his family knew that dancing in public was his weakness. His older brother started in, while sister-in-law Tammy said, "Go, don't leave her hanging. Screw those guys." Martin had previous experience dating older Swedish teenagers before he was in high school. So shyness was not the issue. It was dancing in public. He was very bashful about dancing in front of others. This young woman clearly already had a hold on him, and once something got a hold of Martin's attention, then it was going to be the most engaging subject there could be. All attention, full speed ahead. We don't need no stinking brakes or a rearview mirror. From then on, that week's stay during Christmas, a very special Christmas, the two became inseparable, and the item of entertainment for hotel residents who appeared to Martin and Florentia as extras in their romantic flick. It felt as if everybody was part of their chemical concoction, only there to play supporting roles in their epic adventure. First, the two loitered and lounged in the hotel lobby with her Cypriot friends and Martin's older brother, Ralph. They would all share and joke about their cultures and ways of living, leading to the Cypriots asking silly questions about America like, "Do you know Burt Reynolds?" Martin couldn't pass this opportunity to be ridiculous and said, "Sure, he lives next door. Yesterday he came over for coffee." "Did you know he picks his nose and he eats it too?" Florentia called him out on it before he was even finished. Uh-oh, Martin met his match, and so it was. From then on, they were together every minute, alone on long storybook romantic walks and worn cobblestone roads weaving through the quaint little Cypriot mountain village. Intense dialogue followed by enthusiastic questioning, each so enamored and fascinated with each other. As they turned around to start walking back, she faced him, then opened her hand next to his and gazed into his eyes. And Martin broke the stare that could have led to a kiss, but knew by living in the Middle East earlier that there could be serious consequences. Martin then grabbed her hand almost abruptly. Then they started walking back out of the village and up to the old castle-like hotel. Throughout the whole week, every day, as soon as they could get to each other, they did. All the other holiday residents of the hotel nicknamed them Flo Marty. That was the combo of their family given nicknames, Flo and Marty. Martin didn't mind being second. He preferred it. He liked seeing Florentia raised up high. Wherever you saw them, they were always in constant, joyful conversation, even while walking. They just could not stop. Don't believe they even considered that possibility. Their presence together was like a treasured mascot pair of the hotel, sort of a Mickey and Minnie Mouse kind of thing. They would often be talking so much that they would forget mealtimes with their families. The families only saw this as a sweet and humorous. Their families only saw this as sweet and humorous. On the days they met early at the bottom of... On the last day, they met early at the bottom of the large old staircase that descends to the small enclave lobby, where they sat for the last time to say their goodbyes and cast their ships to sea. They felt as though these were the end of days. As they embraced, pulled away, and quickly embraced again, he noticed a change in her. A calm contentment grew upon her face as she seemed consoled. As she ascended the staircase, he watched his past future disappear into obscurity. Martin was shaken and stirred. For once, Martin didn't know what to think. Unfortunately, that was going to change. A distinguished Cypriot elder solemnly approached Martin, descending from the same staircase where Florentia had just ascended. Then this man with warmth in his eyes introduced himself as Florentia's father, Bahadur, and said, "Martin, it is nice to speak with you." "Yes, thank you. It is my honor," replied Martin. They sat, and Bahadur started with, "Martin, I must have a talk with you. There is something I must share with you." Martin responded in a soft, reserved tone, "Yes, sir." The father said, "Florentia is a very strong, special girl." Martin immediately responded, "Yes, sir." "Florentia has a very serious illness," her father drudged on, now having difficulty continuing. Martin's face flushed with inquisitive pain. Moving on, Florentia's father said, "She has enjoyed her time with you like no other in her life. She has been sick her whole life, but is special like you and has touched so many, and now you have touched her." Martin was stunned, speechless again, for only the third time in his life, all related to her. Bahadur's eyes welled with tears and said, "Today is it. Doctors say she will not make it through the day, but you gave her all she wanted before her final ascension, a romance." What was Martin to say? But again, nothing. Then, eyes opening wide, he demanded to be at her bed. The father said, "She doesn't want you to see her all hooked up in bed. She wants you to remember her the way you were together." Martin embraced the father, and they held tight as the father clenched a handful of Martin's shirt at his shoulders. They held the tight embrace as if long-known close relatives at a passing. After the release, nothing was said, just a mournful glance and a knowing gaze as the father started back up that staircase. Floored, Martin could only watch Florentia's father ascend to his daughter's... Floored, Martin could only watch Florentia's father ascend to his daughter's final words, and he was sure whatever beautiful, wise words from beyond her limited years would comfort her father along with a warm passing smile. That was the beautiful light Florentia shone on this world. After Martin started to realize he was in another world and snapped out quickly enough to load luggage in the car, immediately after coaxing himself into the back of this Suburban, he realized he never gave Lanthea her last kiss and began to cry for the inadequacy he left. Nobody knew anything, and they were not worthy of her essence. At first he mourned her loss, a great love that was never sealed with a kiss. Now he values the purity of that love and lesson. A greatest love without a kiss is but a memory of a love to live in infamy. Can there have been a more pure and innocent love? At that time, no. The future was only for dreaming. Isn't it beautiful when you see or hear of such a love then unattained? Why didn't they kiss? Maybe they were already at their greatest bliss. What would maybe change if the spell would have been broken with a kiss, Martin thought. People ask, what's love without sex? Martin would then say, the most purely amazing experience and the opportunity to see love and life in a new light. This is a story that should never be lost. Love lost is like a window in your heart. Everybody sees you blown apart. Everybody sees the wind blow. Paul Simon. Author's note. This is a true story. Martin was Marcona's given name at the time, but was called Marty by friends and relatives. Please send comments, feedback, and topic ideas to the writer at KonaGod.love5@gmail.com.